Charles.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. You're listening to KRVS Lafayette Lake Charles. Closing in on 80 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up at 4 o'clock, All Things Considered from NPR News. We begin the hour by heading straight into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me, safely distanced by telephone, I'm really happy to say, is Deej Legg. He is a Grammy-nominated musician. You may have heard his song in Django Unchained in the original soundtrack. He was nominated for that. And an award-winning writer. He's been a journalist and now the author of an amazing book called Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver, that is being published by the UL Lafayette Press. It will come out in November. And Deej, not only were you a part of the original soundtrack and nominated, but Quentin Tarantino is quoted as saying, "Brother Deej is a far-out dude."
Yeah, he must have done his research to get that quote. That's a good one.
Yeah, it is. That, I mean, who? How many writers and musicians would just pray for Quentin Tarantino?
I get lucky sometimes, you know. It's like, it's hard road. It's not easy. But once in a while, you stick with it long enough, something good comes around. So, yeah.
And we're happy to say that you've been on KRVS several times.
Yep.
Usually during Cecil Doyle's program, Medicine Ball Caravan. So I'm really honored to be talking to you about your latest project here. He's usually talking to you about a song you've written or an album that's come out. So
sweet. Yeah, Cecil, great guy.
He is, and he really appreciates your music, as do we all. You do tour a lot with your band, I think Brother Deej and the Brethren. You tour in the U.S. and in Europe as well.
Correct.
So you're a busy person, and you've been a busy person all your life. Cab driver is not the only job that you held over the years. So I expect we could get a lot of memoirs out of your resume,
That's the plan.
Yeah, I mean, memoirs of a line cook, memoirs of a warehouseman. people could be clamoring for that.
Yeah, a lot of crappy jobs over the years, just to do the sacrifices you have to make to kind of lead a creative lifestyle. It's difficult, and that's one of the sacrifices you make. You wash dishes and change oil and batteries and tires and work in warehouses and do a lot of labor jobs, but I'm thankful I had those jobs too.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think of a lot of musicians and writers and creative people or who would like to be, want to be, they have this romantic notion about how you just sit and you get to write all day.
I wish, it's a hustle. It's a struggle, especially in the jungle of deep South Louisiana, to be an artist down here, you really got to have your game on and, you got to have some talent to get in the door, and then you have to have a lot of hustle to be able to sustain it.
Right. And that's in a long tradition of musicians in South Louisiana, especially, you hear all the stories of, the early musicians who recorded. They were not full-time musicians. They worked in a variety of jobs and kind of played when they could or on the weekends, but they didn't support themselves with their music.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that stuff also informs their music, too, in a way that keeps it grounded. It's what maybe people resonate with.
Absolutely. And I think people will hear as we continue to talk about the book how your work informed yours. I do have to say also, this is a memoir, but it feels like so much more than that. And I was feeling it as I was reading some of the entries in the book, but in the press release that I had received, it validated what I was feeling. I want to read people just the first couple lines here. A broke and unemployed musician lands a gig driving a cab through the swamplands of South Louisiana while bobbing and weaving through a nighttime world ruled by drugs, guns, saints, and strippers. I had been feeling, not so much the exact story, but the feeling of Confederacy of Dunces. I was reading through your work and some of the flights of writing that John Kennedy Toole reached in that book. And I was really stunned at the quality of what you were working on in this book. So that put me in mind of, these traditions of South Louisiana and what do creative people like you, John Kennedy Toole, in order to really experience and write about this world, what do you have to do? What do you have to experience to get there?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
John Kenny O'Toole, a great writer. But in my case, I just needed a job.
Okay.
However, I've also tried to kill two birds, one stone with every job I've done. Mm-hmm. Is like, how do I make this thing that I'm having to do to survive into art into a creative project? And I knew from the get-go that driving a cab would be good, and I didn't know that job was available until, as I mentioned in the book, I'm living in a rent motel, low rent motel, and I needed a job and got that one. I was like, this is going to be great. It's going to be fun. I'm out of some cash on a nightly basis to do this. I'm not going to go broke, and I'll be able to write about it. I knew right away that that I was going to apply that, because I'd been living in those motels for a month or so, like low rent motels at the time, because I'd just gotten out of a relationship and couldn't afford a down payment on a deposit. So I started writing about the motel stuff, and then the cab stuff came in, and it coincided. And it was just kind of a, it was a rough little period, because Santa Rita, my old band, had just broken up. We'd been together 10 years, and I needed to find something to do. You know, I wasn't going to quit music, but I wasn't making a living doing it.
Yeah, so a lot of changes in your life at that point. Break up with a band, break up with a relationship, and facing the future. Now, when you talk about writing, what kind of writing did you do first? I want to tell people also that you actually have a degree in philosophy. So you've obviously written a lot in school. But as far as creative writing, where did you start? Was it songwriting? Was it writing poems?
Short stories. I took a class at LSU on short stories. But, you know, like everybody, I wrote my goofy poetry and notebooks and stuff like that, or journaling. Mostly it was journaling. And that's kind of the thing that's I still do to this day in published form. So it's just kind of a therapeutic means of getting this stuff out of you and kind of making sense of the world. And the more you do it, the kind of better you get. And, you know, like the style of writing in the catalog, it's something that goes way back, because I'd been doing it in my old band Santa Rita under the name Road Log, and documenting the bands, my band at the time, and all the silly stuff. And I just applied that same format to catalog. And so mostly nonfiction, occasionally some fiction stuff. I'd written a crazy hillbilly book that was more like a creative exercise and not censoring myself.
So in this creative nonfiction, journaling, blogging, keeping logs, was there someone you were thinking of? Is there a writer that you've read in particular that really resonated with you? Or did this style just come purely from yourself? Was there a... You know, I guess I'm also kind of thinking of Nelson Algren, too, in some of Walk on the Wild Side. And
I've never read him, but I always gravitated toward the kind of outsider artists, writers and stuff like that. Henry Miller, Celine, Bukowski, Jack Kerouac, all of the beats. I loved all that stuff. And, you know, my introduction to writing, well, like a lot of people, was, you know, Melville and the classics that you're kind of obligated to read when in school. And I found that stuff so boring, you know, like Melville describing all the items on a dresser and the mirror and the wood that it's made out of and all these little things. I'm like, this is the most boring stuff I've ever read in my life. Like, this is books. And then, you know, I discovered all the kind of wilder side of that stuff, in addition to a lot of the classics, you know, but I've always gravitated toward that. And I, you know, it can't help but inform my writing in some way, but I definitely, maybe when I was younger, imitated some of those styles, and maybe you can still see some of that in there, but I consciously tried to create my own ornate, but speed reading version of prose. So it just moves along fast.
That's a great way to describe it, because it does move fast and it grips you as you're reading it. And but some of the beats that you're talking about, the beat writers, I can see that too. There's this extremely heightened, fast experience of the world, and it comes through in their writing as well.
Big
so
time.
It's. I want to tell people who are just tuning in, my guest is Deej Legg. Some of you may know him as Brother Deej. You've been on our station many times talking about your music, but we're talking about a book that is being published by the UL Lafayette Press, Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver. And this is based upon, I think, 5 years of driving a cab in Lafayette.
Correct. 2003 to 2008, that was my tenure in the cab on the night shift, you know, 4 p.m. in the afternoon to 4 in the morning, give or take. And, yeah, it was a wild run. And in the book, you can see kind of the trajectory, the arc of what happens to me, which is I'm excited, it's new, it's fun. Then I get locked in the groove about 2-3 years into it. I'm like, yeah, okay, I got this job wired. Let me keep writing about it. And then the last year or two, I'm just kind of fed up with it because it's frustrating. You're dealing with a lot of drunk people, and I was just kind of done with it, you know, or I was feeling worse about my reactions to people, to these kind of difficult situations, you know, and, you know, it's easier to be a Buddha on the mountain than a saint in the streets. And when you're really deep down in it, you know, it's hard to sometimes describe yourself as enlightened when you're just reacting in really kind of violent ways sometimes and just angry. It's tough.
Right.
You know,
and
I got burnout on it.
Well, and it's fascinating. I mean, when you're reading and you first encounter the characters and the stories, it's kind of exhilarating experiencing it with you. But I can't imagine that after you've seen the same person 3, 4, 5 times or the same story over and over and over again, it does become disturbing and disheartening, and you realize that it is a cycle and it's not going to break for them.
Yeah, it's hard to save the world, you know, from the front seat of a cab. So, you know, not like that was my intention, but I did try to do as many good things as I could and failed many times too. So as it's documented in the book.
Yeah, you know. Well, let's talk just a bit about some of the structure of the book. First of all, there's a great introduction by your friend Scott Jordan, who is a journalist and editor and who you've worked with closely over the years. How did you start to structure these journals and your observations? How did you feel you wanted this to flow? What did you want to include? I mean, it seems like it's chronological, but there's also an arc to it, it feels like.
Well, namely, we write everything down in the cab, you know, so everything is scribbled. All my little notes were scribbled alongside of the person's address, literally in a 1-inch wide margin on the left-hand side of the page. And I jumped over to the far right and make more notes and then transcribe all that gibberish at the next morning. You know, that was my daily routine.
But you were taking this down as you were working.
If it was interesting, you know, there were many mundane cab rides weren't that interesting. I mean, even the book and the unedited version was 800 pages long, which was whittled down to 250 pages of the best stories. Some of the stuff didn't age well or was boring. It's kind of neat chatting, you know, or just observing things. But yeah, the arc of the book and the writing, you see way more of me in the beginning. I'm introducing myself. I'm living in the motel. I'm broke. Need a job. And then I kind of just disappear, and the reader, it's all written in the present tense. It's not past tense. It's first person, present tense. And I'm, it's like the reader gets to see through the front windshield of my little yellow submarine of the cab.
Oh, that's a nice
image. I just
image.
disappear in there. And I actually tried to introduce more of my personal life, what was going on with me, and the book just got more boring. You know, I mean, there's a lot of that, and maybe it's interesting, but it seemed to get in the way of the actual stories of the cab log. So it's just each entry and chapter is kind of like just machine gun fire of like mimicking the fast pace of the cab world and the job with things just, you know, just waterfalling on you, you know, character after character.
Right. It's interesting. One of the descriptions in the press is they call it an observational memoir, which are kind of interesting. Just sort of hearkening back, what you were saying about Melville describing, you know, object after object after object, and I could imagine that an observational memoir could become sort of sterile and a little boring. But that's never a word anyone would apply to this. I mean, obviously because of some of the characters, but it's also the way you write about them, as though you were imbuing them with something, some humanity that often gets left out of descriptions of people like this.
There's many magic moments where you're not ready for it, and then something happens, you see someone in a grocery store, and you just you feel the human connection. And I mention this in the book a lot of times. We're so numb to one another, we're just buried in our own stuff, and servicing people in the cab gave me an opportunity to kind of occasionally bust out of that. And I would make note of it and try to write about those tiny little moments where the magic is. It's not always something epic like a giant house burning down or, you know, me wrecking the cab in a ditch or something like that, even though there is a lot of drama. Sometimes I think the most moving parts in the book are the quiet little moments where, you know, a married couple is back there chit-chatting or arguing or something, or old ladies coming back from the store, just tiny little things. And it takes a lot of mining to get that. You know, it took a lot of nights in the cab to find those right stories. And, right. You know,
I think one thing that struck me as well, I had to keep reminding myself, this is taking place here.
Yeah.
This is not New York City. This is not the seedy side of Los Angeles. This is a small
community. I was
kind of
shocked, too. Even me, having been a musician with many occupational hazards, you know, I was surprised, like, the amount of drug use and abuse and alcohol abuse, which is, you know, it's part of the state and the culture. But definitely the drug use ran from, you know, the fancy part of town, you know, straight up into the lower-income neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. It was all over the place, so yeah. I couldn't pigeonhole one person or type of person that it would apply to, but yeah, it was eye-opening for me as well.
One of the things that struck me also, I mean, there's obviously tragic elements, drug use and, you know, things happening that are tragic for people, but there was always this amazing vein of humor as well, running through a lot of the stories.
And, yeah,
I mean, the story with the television set.
Yeah, that's right out of the gate. That's one of my first rides, I think.
Yes, can you describe that?
Okay, well, I think it was my first night on the job after I'd done an initial ride along for a training session with another guy who was...
That was quite humorous.
He was a character, too. But the humor, I mean, to address that real quick, and then I'll hit the story, is life is pretty absurd, or mine has always felt pretty absurd. One of the things that's got me through the depressing kind of elements is having a sense of humor about some of this stuff and kind of just taking it on the chin and rolling with it and maybe trying to see the funnier side of it or the deeper side of it. You know, there's a few little gears that I like to get into when I'm doing this kind of writing. And that's one of them. In this particular case, it was my first night on the job and some guy jumped in the cab with a giant old school TV, you know, like the ones that are about the size of a recliner, you know, it's pre-flat screen. And he gets in, and I just kind of raise an eyebrow, and he's like, I'm going to pay you on the other end. I'm selling this TV to somebody else, and that's how I'm going to pay for the cab ride. And I was like, okay. I was pretty green at that point, and sure enough, we got there. I think it was a hotel, and of course, the guy didn't have the money, didn't want the TV. So I ended up paying for that guy's cab ride, which is the policy in the cab, and I ended up having to keep the TV in the back seat, but it was so big that when I went on my next ride, the two or three ladies that wanted to get in the cab, they're like, what the hell is this in the back seat? I'm like, okay. So I hop out and literally just drag this giant TV out of the back of the cab, back seat of the cab, by the way, and stick it on the curb. And that was off to the races. You know?
And again, I'm going to, you know, go back to Confederacy of Dunces and the moments where there are very few books that I kind of laugh out loud in. I did with Confederacy of Dunces, and just these moments where, yes, these people's lives are kind of tragic, but there's, like you said, there's humanity and humor, and it's quite funny, the situations that you can get into. And your description of it is so vivid and clear, and you get your reaction and the people that you're dealing with. And it was charming. It just, it grabbed me.
They keep you entertained. You know, life is a trip and everybody's just trying to figure it out. You know, I mean, there's a constant learning process. And in the cab, you're meeting 30 to 40 people a night, you know, and you're getting a piece of their experience. Most of them aren't dramatic, but, you know,
right,
one to five of them a night might have something interesting to glean from.
And I guess that's the other thing, too, that you were a nighttime cab driver. There is a surreal element to that just right there. And this, when you said you're talking about the Yellow Submarine, you do have the sense of being surrounded by the dark and the night.
Yeah.
When you're writing about these people, it's just you and them and the
Right, we're behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're in the confines of these cabs where, you know, they don't know I'm a writer, and I'm not even sure I'm going to be writing about them.
Mm-hmm.
But and little did I know it was eventually going to become a book. But yeah, there's all these quiet moments that inform the human or inhuman aspect of these things, which there are many. And especially in Louisiana with the darkness, it's so dark and
yes.
foggy sometimes. Like there were so many nights where, you know, I'm out in the middle of nowhere, it's out in the sticks off a wilderness trail, and I can't even see where I'm going and figuring it out. This is pre-smartphones as well. So you're having to look on a map to try and divine where the address is, sometimes psychically to figure it out. So, yeah, I saw so many back pocket, back road, weird little places during my time doing that.
And there's nothing like that in the South, and particularly South Louisiana, nighttime. We all have those memories of the feeling of the atmosphere and the air. And
yeah, the setting is incredible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was, you straddled Katrina, didn't you?
I did. I did. I was working in the cab during the Katrina and the Rita stuff when Lafayette was really over.
How did
I guess it gained about 20,000 to 40,000 people
right.
in a week.
Right.
A month.
How did your experiences change during that time? What did you see that was notable at that time?
The job stayed the same, but the volume went way up, mm-hmm. and we ended up getting a lot more, you know, obviously New Orleans people, Lake Charles people, and tragic stories, you know, they're all so many of them, I guess, you know, in the weeks after were just frustrated and brokenhearted or depressed, angry, agitated. So sometimes it was difficult dealing with them. Some are really grateful that they have a place to stay. But, you know, I mean, I picked up a couple guys that got washed out and flooded in like St. Bernard Parish, you know, and all they had left were the rags of their clothes, which were falling off of them. So the I think the local sheriffs around here just gave them prison jumpsuits to wear, you know.
Wow. People who are just tuning in, finding yourself fascinated by this, my guest is Deej Legg. He is a musician. He's a writer and has done many jobs. He's worn many hats. He is writing about one of those hats in Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver, that is being published by the UL Lafayette Press. It comes out in November. And I think, Deej, you all are having a virtual event to bring out the book on November 12th, Thursday, November 12th.
Correct.
You'll be talking with Reese Fuller, I think,
yeah.
On that night. And is it going to be emanating from a particular place, or is it?
I think it's going to be virtual, you
okay.
know, like a lot of stuff nowadays. But Garden District Books in New Orleans is sponsoring it.
Okay.
And,
so you will
should
kind
be fun.
Be
Reese
there.
Is a good guy. He's
yes.
in the IRA. Co-worker as Scott Jordan was. Scott Jordan's actually the guy that's responsible in some ways for publishing, for getting me really rolling with the Cablog stuff. Because I was doing it, he was working at the Independent, and I submitted it. This I was like, hey, how about this idea for a story? This is me working in the cab for the first year. I just completed the first year. And you know what? He really liked it. He coached me on it, helped me kind of shape it. And that was my first published real, you know, other than online stuff as a Meter Man, which is a feature story in the Independent.
Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm.
Thanks to Scott for that.
Well, he's a huge admirer, and his introduction is just lovely. So what happened to you as a writer, Deej, as you continued on beyond that first year and continued writing and thinking more about perhaps publishing this someday? What did it do to you as a songwriter, as a creative nonfiction writer? Did you notice anything developing in your writing that you got deeper, better, more skilled? What happened?
That's a good question. Well, a lot of people, you know, mostly when they hear I drove a cab, it's, you know, what did you learn about all the people? And
mm-hmm.
you learn a lot, but you really learn a lot about yourself.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
in my case, not just as a writer, but as a human being, I was dealing, you deal with so much rational, erratic behavior, sometimes fueled by alcohol and all those things. So in my case, I thought I was here, you know, like it may be on the enlightened scale of being able to handle and react to things in a functional, healthy manner. I thought it was maybe like a 7.5. I was actually like a 5.2, you know, and it took some learning and growing, you know, mm-hmm. like not to react or which I don't, you know, it just, you get mad and people and stuff. And I'm no different. And so it was really, it humbled me a lot as far as where I thought I was, maybe metaphysically, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. As a writer, it was just more material for me to kind of hone that style of writing, that speed writing, I guess I would call it. But, you know, I go off on all these tangents that are floral and ornate that, when I feel it, I riff on it, you know. Mm-hmm. Kind of
it edges on songwriting. It edges on poetry sometimes.
Yeah, it's prose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fusion of, you know, nonfiction writing and, mm-hmm. and prose. And even the formatting of the book is a bit experimental, you know, and the paragraph breaks and, you know, the dialogue and stuff like that. So.
Well, it was lovely, and it felt like songwriting in some places. How did it affect you as a songwriter? Did you find yourself using some of that material or being informed by some of that material?
Songwriting and the writing are two separate worlds for me. Okay. What happens with the songwriting is I kind of just get in a dreamy state and kind of muse it out, whereas in the cab, it's almost more like a journalism thing, but an ornate kind of journalism that I'm putting a lot of my own flavor into. But I don't think I've written too many songs, if at all, about the actual specific experiences in the catalog, because I find when I write songs, it's better to just kind of dream them out. When I go into a narrative form and try to tell a story, to me, at least songwriting wise, just for myself, it feels boring or a little forced. Mm-hmm. So they're actually two great outlets, different for me to kind of explore and get the stuff out. So. Mm.
Well, you know, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of stories in this book. As you said, it was 800 pages. You all finally cut it down to something over 200 pages.
Yeah.
Are there a couple that you particularly just love? A couple stories that I know there's so many and you experience all of them.
I know there is a lot. I mean, there's some pretty dramatic turns in there. At one point, I don't love this one, but it's informative because I got robbed at one point. And this is like 3 or 4 years into the job. I wasn't even green. I was, you know, I had it on lock and maybe was even a little too lackadaisical or confident about it. And they caught me slipping, you know. I was in an apartment complex and I think four guys got in the cab and they kept delaying, kind of distracting me. And then boom, one pulled out a gun and stuck it in my face. And it's just like the movies. All you do is stare at the at the barrel of the gun. You're just staring at it. It's like a black hole into another dimension. And you kind of fixate on it, and you just kind of wait for the lights to go out. Luckily, that didn't happen. But that was wild.
Wow.
Probably got a little PTSD from that. But throughout the whole robbery, I remained calm, and, you know, I had $61 in my pocket. And I was like, dude, it's a Monday night. You picked the wrong night to rob somebody.
What a line. What a response.
I could explain it to him, you know. I'd say, here, you got it. Take it, buddy. It's all yours. You know, where's the rest? There is no rest. This is it.
That's a Monday night in a cab.
Yeah. Ooh. But that's one. A lot of the sweet older people, you know, in the cab business in Lafayette is – I think it's probably, and I'm just guessing here, about 70% of the clientele is mostly people without cars. They just can't afford a car at this time. So they're using the cab to go to and from work, the grocery store, their friend's house, their girlfriend's house, you know, out to dinner. Then maybe the other 10% is people coming and going from the airport or the bus. And then another 10-15% is people that are DUIs and trying to avoid that, getting a DUI, or they have one. So it's a lot of the little moments of just, I think, older people just kind of tossing their little wisdom out, or even how they're handling themselves, sweet older couples that have been married for years, and or a mother and her son. There was an episode where they were coming from the grocery store and kind of balancing their checkbook at the time, and I just thought that was so sweet, you know, like them just trying to make it. And she actually forgot her checkbook in the cab. I found it, like, you know, 15 minutes later and sped back over there and gave it back to her. And she was crying, you know, like she really thought she was screwed, but she wasn't, you know.
What an array of experiences and emotions and people you write about in here.
It was a wild ride.
Yeah. So how did you feel when you, like you said, you were ready, it was time. But what were your emotions when you stopped driving that cab? Were you going to miss it?
It wasn't celebratory, no. And mm-hmm. you know what? Even after, I was kind of ready to be done with this. I could just mm-hmm. feel the chat. You feel like it's another chapter that needs to be turned over, and I've yeah. run this into the ground. I've mm-hmm. got what I wanted out of it. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I started. I actually got a job at the Independent. Scott Jordan, Sue Reese said, "Hey, why don't you you want to do the calendar and art section?" And that was kind of one of the things that, in the back of my mind, that helped me make the jump. But mm-hmm. you know, I didn't miss it. I didn't. It was. I did my time. It's right. 5 years out there, and it was exhausting at times. It's 12-hour shifts. You know, there's an element of danger involved, and at some point, you're that glass gets full. And mine was pretty full, or maybe overflowing at the time, as far as the experiential part of it. And I was a little tired.
It was tough.
And yeah, and it's a tough job, you know. It's not always easy, and it's not a high prestige job, you know. So you're hanging out with your friends, and or you're meeting someone, and you're having to introduce yourself. What do you do? Well, I'm driving a cab. They think that's interesting, but it's. It's a dead-end job. It's tough, you know, and I had little flashes in my mind, like, am I going to be doing this in 10 years or 20 years? You know, which many guys do. There's a lot of old-timers mm-hmm. who tend to navigate toward, they all work the day shift. Their eyes are bad. They've been doing it a long time. They've earned those day shifts. New drivers, almost all of them that are hired, get put on the night shift. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's the boot camp, and it's exciting.
Well, it was fertile ground for you, and we are so glad you did, because I know that anyone who takes the opportunity to read this book is going to be just so amazed at your writing, at your experiences here, and the fact that this is happening in our community, in a small community. And it's
a document, and it's a good book for people that don't even like to read it, is the way I like to describe it. Like, even if you don't like books... there's a good chance you might like this one. And if you do like books, I think you'd like it. It's nonfiction, real stories. This stuff really happened. Mm-hmm. And I think that adds a gravity to everything. It's not just stuff I made up.
Real stories, but so beautifully written, Deej.
Thank you so much.
They are exquisite. They really are. Again, you may just be tuning in. My guest is Deej Legg. He is a musician. You've heard his music on KRVS. You've heard him on Cecil's program. But he is also a writer, a journalist, and a nonfiction writer. And we are also pleased to be able to read his work in Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver, his 5 years driving a cab at nighttime in Lafayette, Louisiana, just published or will be published in November by the UL Lafayette Press, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. There will be a virtual online, book release on November 12th. Where online can they find that if they want
to? That's a good question. If you go to my site, which is brotherdeej.net, I should have a link in the kind of news section.
Okay.
There's been so much. I'm juggling so many things right now, I can't name it off the top mm-hmm. of my head. And I'm still a little illiterate as far as all this Zoom stuff goes. I think it's going to be Zoom based.
Oh, okay.
So I'm still learning all that. You know, I was actually supposed to do my first one earlier today with a show in South Africa, a talk show that was going to hit me up. But cool. I'm learning.
Yeah. I think probably the UL Press may have information on that, too.
Sure.
They would probably have something on their website also.
Garden District Books.
Okay. And you can right now, to find out more about the book, go to the UL Lafayette Press and look for Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver. So have you been writing a lot of music also lately?
Oh, yeah. During this downtime with the pandemic stuff, I'd gotten lucky in a sense. I'd already scheduled this whole spring of 2020 and the summer to make a new record and take a break from touring, which we'd been doing a lot of, you know, really since 2012, I hadn't had a whole lot of downtime. So in January, I went in my studio space and started working on the next thing. And then, you know, a couple months later, the COVID stuff happened, and I kind of poked my head up, looked around, and just kept going. You know, I was already kind of isolated in my little creative bubble. So yeah, I've got pretty much, I think 80-85% done with the new record, which came out really good. I enjoyed the downtime actually, which mm-hmm. made for some, unfortunately gigs got canceled, but it made for good self-reflection, kind of weighing in where I am at this point in my life, you know. Having been on this hustle for a while now, it gave me a chance to kind of breathe and assess things.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I was interviewing a young Cajun musician not too long ago, and we don't think of Cajun music, particularly sort of more contemporary Cajun music, is very introspective, tends to be more dance music. But he was saying the same thing as you, that this really allowed him and other Cajun songwriters he knew to tap that side of themselves and to spend the more quiet time and write quieter songs and more reflective songs. So,
agreed. Yeah. I mean, everything's a hustle, you know. I mean, it's just making a living these days is tough, and they keep you on the track. And I was kind of grateful to be able to take a breather from all that, you know, and still be able to pay the rent.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to see this generation of albums coming out by young musicians like yourselves, and how is it different? What have you all done with your time? And well, we look forward to that, and we hope to have you on KRVS to talk about that series of songs when you have it recorded.
Fantastic. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, Deej, thank you for taking time in this busy schedule right now with the book coming out and all of your other activities. Cablog, Diary of a Cab Driver by Deej Legg. It is published by the UL Lafayette Press here on the UL campus. You can find out more by going to their website. There will be a virtual book release event on November 12th. You will be interviewed, or you'll have a conversation with Reese Fuller, and we will all look forward to that. Anything else we should know about the book, or something we missed?
That's it. It'll make a great Christmas gift for your wife, husband, friend, enemy.
It's a read.
I'm really proud of it. Yes. I mean, I wrote it 10 years ago and then kind of revised it over the next 10 because it was so long. And to be honest, I was kind of over it. I was on to my next stuff, but I was like, I got to get this baby out into the world. So I'm really proud of it. I'm glad it's out there. I cringed at a couple things, but you know, everybody grows. You're not the same person you were 10 years ago. But thank y'all for having me on here. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Again, just so enjoyed it so much. And I think anyone who reads it will find out so much more about our culture and our world here, perhaps a side that they didn't know about before.
Big time.
Thank you so much, Deej.
Thank you.